Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's Oil and Gas Report for Sunday, July 26. Mid-year report. Deloitte Outlook details energy industry challenges ahead. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Having made it through 6 months that have brought unprecedented economic hardship, including to the energy industry, companies are wondering about the next 6 months. A mid-year 2020 oil and gas industry outlook issued by Deloitte LLP sees a drastic drop in fuel and power demand, presenting a challenging 18 months ahead for the industry. A budding recovery could extend into the early to mid-2020s. Deloitte said the industry was already in flux before the COVID-19 pandemic arrived, coping with 5 years of low oil prices, an oversupplied liquefied natural gas market, and the energy transition taking hold. The accounting organization outlined three challenges industry must address: navigating weak oil demand, companies may need to permanently lower their cost structure through discharging debt or restructuring, build in the ability to ramp up and ramp down their capabilities, and ensure capital expenditure cuts this year don't reduce the ability to scale production in the near to midterm. Adapt to lower for longer in the global gas markets. Larger LNG payers could invest through the down cycle to develop distribution infrastructure, while consolidation opportunities arise for operators in shale gas plays like the Marcellus and Haynesville as associated gas production drops from lower drilling activity, balancing priorities in the face of low oil prices and the energy transition. Companies could improve the energy efficiency of existing operations and manage fugitive methane emissions while expanding research efforts into biofuels, carbon sequestration, and other technologies. Dwayne Dixon, Vice Chairman, U.S. Oil, Gas, and Chemicals Leader at Deloitte, discussed the review by email with the Reporter-Telegram. Question: what do you see as the most important challenge the industry needs to tackle first? Answer: while oil and gas prices are often volatile, many companies are still getting their bearings following the sharp downward demand shock caused by the coronavirus and subsequent regional economic lockdowns. Many, if not most, producers have already responded by reducing drilling activity, cutting costs, and rationalizing headcount, which has impacted other companies in the value chain. The question right now is how they can best position themselves for a potential recovery by retaining scalability while maintaining spending in line with current market conditions. Agility will be key because the pace of the recovery is so uncertain. Question: do you think the industry will enter 2021 with fewer companies? Could it become the domain of the larger or largest with deep pockets? Answer: many oil and gas companies, particularly U.S. independents, were financially stressed prior to the crash in oil and gas prices and were not well positioned to weather the storm. That could create opportunities for larger companies with stronger balance sheets, but these players need to focus on value-added transactions. We have seen a number of bankruptcies in the last few months, and we will likely see continued restructuring activity through the rest of the year. So, yes, we will likely enter 2021 with fewer companies. Some will survive intact, many will restructure, some will merge, and a few will vanish. Question: Do you see any recovery of note in the second half of the year, or are current price and activity levels here into the next year? Answer. Price has already recovered significantly from the April lows. The pace of further recovery in prices will primarily be driven by the broader global economic recovery. We saw a rebound in driving and air travel in May and June following initial lockdowns in several regions, but the pace of economic reopening remains uncertain. Activity levels may be a bit of a different story, with substantial amounts of production shut in earlier this year. If prices remain at current levels, you would expect those shut-in wells to come back online, and as production levels naturally decline, some increase in drilling and completion activity, albeit at significantly lower levels than we saw this time last year. Question. This is a question I ask frequently, but is there concern that the significant cutbacks in drilling, exploration, and output could result in significant supply shortages down the road? Answer. Ultimately, oil and gas is a cyclical business, and we have seen large shifts in capital investment, production, and prices over the last decade. Over the last 6 months, the U.S. rig count has fallen by almost 70%, the international rig count close to 50%. Part of that drop reflects a slowdown in U.S. shale activity, which can ramp up relatively quickly if capital returns, but it also includes the deferment of conventional and offshore major capital projects. Those types of projects have long lead times, and the delays we see today could lead to shortfalls in production over the next few years as the economy recovers. In that case, what we would normally see is a relatively rapid increase in shorter cycle shale drilling and an increase in oil and gas prices to incentivize increased investment in the sector. Lack of capital could potentially lead to oil supply shortages, exacerbated by a significant strain in the oil field service supply chain that has also significantly downsized as a result of the downturn. Christy Craddock says Railroad Commission prepared to meet multiple challenges. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Business has gone on at the Railroad Commission even as the COVID-19 pandemic has brought things to a near standstill. Quote, the agency is still functioning and working hard to function, even though we're not in the office, said Commissioner Christy Craddock. Speaking during an online webinar, Craddock said about 20% of agency staff continue to go to offices in Austin, and field inspectors have continued their work despite the pandemic. The oil demand destruction and accompanying oil price collapse resulting from economy shuttering to stem the virus has impacted Texas oil output, she said. Quote, but we aren't down as much as I thought we would be. I find the market is working. It may be good or bad, but the market is working, she said during the weekly webinar that is organized by Grant Schwartzwelder, president and owner of OTA Compression LLC, OTA Environmental and Chimark, and co-sponsored by the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. Craddock said Texas production, which fell from 4.2 million barrels a day to 3.7 million barrels a day, is now at an estimated 3.9 million barrels a day. Natural gas production has dropped 3% to 27 billion cubic feet from the 28.5 BCF to 29 BCF seen at the beginning of the year. Quote, production numbers are up, which is interesting because we're off almost 70% in the rig count, and that's huge for the state and huge for the country, she said. As important, Craddock said the number of drilling permits issued by the agency has fallen from about 60 a day to 20 a day, and, quote, I'm shocked we're still issuing 20 a day. end quote. She said that will affect the agency's budget significantly because it is self-funded, relying on the fees the operators pay for the permits. Quote, "We were beginning to see some change, interestingly, at the end of last year," Craddock said. "If you look at drilling permits, permits even the fourth quarter of 2019 were down 10% from the year before. We chalked that up to CAPEX being spent, a bit of a slowdown. We expected this year to be relatively the same, flat, but not as bad as we are experiencing," end quote. In a debate watched around the globe, Craddock, Chair Wayne Christian, and Commissioner Ryan Sitton discussed implementing statewide production cuts for the first time since 1973. The discussion began about the time of spring break when she got a phone call from executives at Pioneer Natural Resources. Quote, "They gave us good data overall. They said, look, we think this is going to get worse, and we think we need to look at proration. We haven't done prorationing since 1973, she said. Those who were around in the late 1970s, early 1980s, the reality is we haven't limited production since 1973, she said. As agency staff was debating how to do prorationing, she said Pioneer called again and told her, we think it's going to go negative, and we're going for prorationing, she said. Pioneer, joined by Parsley Energy, requested a hearing to determine if the state's continued production of crude was a waste of resources amid the demand destruction seen around the globe. In an April 14th meeting that lasted 11 hours, the commissioners took testimony in favor of and against implementing production cuts. Craddock said the meeting was watched online by over 30,000 people from every state except Hawaii and a number of other nations, with South Korea just behind the U.S. in number of viewers. As the question was debated, she said a lot was going on behind the scenes, including discussions with producing states Oklahoma, North Dakota, Alaska, and Alberta, Canada. Quote, Oklahoma had made the early decision not to mandate cuts. North Dakota was waiting on us. Canada wanted to be in on the conversation because they see real value in having a relation with the U.S., Mexico as well. We were all having problems with Russia, Saudi Arabia, and OPEC Plus, she said. Another behind-the-scenes piece of the puzzle was efforts by the Trump administration to end the market share battle between Saudi Arabia and Russia that resulted in an agreement by the two countries, other members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, and other nations to cut production. Permian Basin operators were also voluntarily shutting in significant amounts of production. Ultimately, the commission in May voted against prorationing, and Craddock said it was the right decision. Quote, we've moved on, she said. What will be the challenge for all industries is, what do we do next? If the virus is still around in 6 months, 18 months, what will that look like? End quote. With the state expecting a budget shortfall of about $4.5 billion, due primarily to the decline in taxes and royalties paid by the oil and gas industry, Craddock expects the agency's budget will be impacted. The agency is not hiring staff except for those like field inspectors, and is not buying trucks. Quote, I'm having conversations with legislative leaders, telling them that we're a small part of the budget overall, but we regulate an industry that brings in a lot of revenue. We need help, and we need consistency. We're asking for that again this budget cycle. End quote. She credits advances in the agency's information technology, begun when she became a commissioner, for helping keep workflow smooth. The agency has put a lot of applications online, has held meetings online and staff has been able to work remotely during the pandemic. But she said more advances are needed. Other challenges will be continuing to meet the well plugging and site remediation targets set by the agency by the legislature. Also, even though drilling permit applications are down sharply, she said there are still 250,000 wells, as well as pipelines, that have to be inspected. The agency could also be drawn into eminent domain challenges regarding pipelines under construction, she said. Another issue the agency will be addressing is flaring and methane emissions. Quote, about a year ago, our staff recognized we were issuing a lot more flaring permits, she said. We started limiting flaring within the agency a year ago. You may not recognize it, but we have limited it a lot, end quote. Flaring, methane emissions, and ESG, environment, social, and governance, concerns are not going away amid the slowdown, she said. If anything, she said, they have intensified. Quote, it's more relevant and vibrant today, she said. Environmentalists see an opportunity about how to get flaring under better control across the board. Some companies do a good job. Others could do a better job. People are focusing more on that. It's not going away. Flaring is still going on, particularly in the Permian Basin and in the Eagle Ford. People are looking for data. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality collects air emissions data from plants and facilities. We collect data from what you give us as an industry, and it doesn't always match up. We're looking for how to collect good data, end quote. There is no magic bullet to fix the issue, she said. Quote, if a company is not paying attention to ESG, methane and flaring, then you're behind the curveball. Companies need better thought processes about when they drill a well, how to drill that well. They need to think about takeaway capacity. It's a pipe world, too. If a gathering system is having issues, that's a conversation they need to have. There are multiple challenges in the food chain, but it needs to be a priority for the industry. It gives us a black eye when we don't need to have one. We won't solve it overnight. We didn't create it overnight, end quote. Moving forward, she said the agency is gearing up for the next legislative session in January and is already preparing a preliminary budget. Conservation agreement for Dunes sagebrush lizard up for public comment. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Permian Basin oil and gas producers and all other interested parties are being urged to provide comments on a candidate conservation agreement with assurances to preserve the Dunes sagebrush lizard received by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Comments are being received through August 17th. The document is available online at https://www.fws.gov/southwest/es/Austin, Texas. If ratified, Canyon Environmental LLC would serve as administrator. The Fish and Wildlife Service told the Reporter-Telegram by email that the new CCAA is based on revisions made by the Texas Comptroller's Office to update the science, simplify the conservation approach, and address some of the challenges to conservation, such as stratification of mineral rights. This CCAA, the agency said, is more inclusive of various economic sectors and is intended to incentive participation by those companies that did not originally participate in the Texas Conservation Plan. The request for comments comes after the FWS completed a 90-day finding following a petition to list the lizard under the Endangered Species Act, that finds the lizard may warrant listing. It also kicks off a year-long status review to determine the status of the animal. Quote, "The Permian Basin Petroleum Association has been leading the fight against the environmentalists who continue to use every tool at their disposal to halt the development of America's oil field, the Permian Basin," Ben Shepard, president of the PBPA, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Continuing the quote, "One of their favorite tools is the Endangered Species Act. Since the U.S. Fish and Wildlife decision last week that a dunes sagebrush lizard listing is warranted, we have been reviewing the draft Candidate Conservation Agreement with Assurances, or CCAA, that they released in their notice. There is a 30-day scoping period after which the USFW will review the CCAA and then release another draft for public comment. The latest version includes language designed to allow members of the sand mining industry to operate while undertaking conservation and mitigation efforts. It is our hope that these changes will help the USFW to determine that a final DSL listing is not warranted." Continuing the quote, "Meanwhile, the PBPA continues our work to update the range-wide plan for the lesser prairie chicken. Along with the USFW, we are working diligently with the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies in a realignment effort designed to ensure that the LPC conservation efforts are durable and defensible. The environmentalists will continue their attacks on the Permian Basin oil and gas industry, and the PBPA will continue to fight to protect our industry." End quote. Michael Robinson, senior conservation advocate with the Centers for Biological Diversity, which filed the petition with the FWS along with Defenders of Wildlife, told a Reporter-Telegram by email that federal protection is all that stands between the lizard, which he calls unique, and extinction. Found only in the Permian Basin of West Texas and New Mexico, the 3-inch lizard has historically possessed the second smallest range of any North American lizard and was identified as needing protection in 1982. Robinson said the proposed CCAA, quote, "is not acceptable as a substitute for an endangered species listing. While the CCAA includes measures that would, if diligently implemented, slow the lizard's trajectory toward extinction, it would allow significant habitat degradation to continue. Moreover, the objectives in the CCAA are aspirational, and adherence to them would again be shielded from disclosure, meaning that what happens on the ground where the lizards live could end up being very different from what gets put in writing." End quote. He added, quote, "The dunes sagebrush lizard has a narrow distribution in Chinnery oak dunes that have been thoughtlessly degraded over the course of decades, leading to the lizard's perilous plight today. Because of its science-based requirements, the Endangered Species Act has been tremendously successful in preventing extinctions and in ensuring conservation of the ecosystems on which endangered species depend. The dunes sagebrush lizard now needs Endangered Species Act protection. Federal courts in the past have overturned decisions not to list species as threatened or endangered when solid science shows that they require such protection, and the Center for Biological Diversity will not stand by passively to enable any future politically driven decision to obliterate this unique lizard." End quote. Following the scoping period, the Fish and Wildlife Agency's draft environmental assessment will be developed and, once completed, will be made available to the public along with the CCAA and permit application for public comment. Endeavor Energy Resources announces new executive leadership. Endeavor Energy Resources LP announced the retirement of Chief Executive Officer Chuck Malloy, effective September 24, 2020. He will remain an active part of the organization as a member of the Board of Directors. Internal successor Lance Robertson, Chief Operations Officer and Senior Vice President of Development, will assume the role of CEO. Quote, "Thank you, Autry Stevens and the Endeavor family, for allowing me the opportunity to serve the company these past 4.5 years. I am proud of the many successes we have enjoyed together, building a top-tier Midland Basin horizontal operator and the largest private oil producer in America," said Malloy. "I look forward to continuing to be part of the organization as a member of the board, and I wholeheartedly congratulate Lance, who is a highly respected internal leader that embodies Endeavor's mission and values," end quote. In 2016, founder and general partner Autry Stevens appointed Malloy as chief executive officer. Since joining Endeavor, Malloy has refocused the company from a predominantly vertical driller to a leading top-tier horizontal operator in the Midland Basin. Since implementing the new horizontal drilling program, the company has completed more than 350 gross operated horizontal wells, with current daily oil production in excess of 130,000 barrels of oil per day. Quote, "Chuck's leadership and vision has forever changed the landscape of Endeavor, and I am thankful for his commitment to this company. Now, more than ever, we are well positioned to be widely successful in the future with great assets and a very talented staff," said Stevens. Continuing the quote, "As we celebrate Chuck's retirement, I congratulate Lance on his new role as CEO. With his experience and ability to lead others, Lance is well prepared to continue Endeavor's path of many successes," end quote. Robertson joined Endeavor as Chief Operating Officer and Senior Vice President of Development in January of 2017. He became a member of the Board of Directors in August of 2018. He has an extensive background with 22 years of experience in the oil and natural gas industry and was most recently Vice President for U.S. Unconventional Resources at Marathon Oil Company, including their resource developments in the Bakken, Eagle Ford, and Anadarko Basin areas, along with technology application, land, supply chain, and North America exploration efforts through August of 2016. Prior to his assignment at Marathon, Robertson served as Vice President for Engineering and Exploitation at Pioneer Natural Resources Company. Quote, "Being part of the sustainable growth and execution of Endeavor's horizontal program over the past few years has been extremely rewarding," said Robertson. "I am grateful to Autry, Chuck, and our talented team for getting Endeavor where it is today and honored to be part of this world-class organization," end quote.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.
If you're a do-it-yourselfer, don't let physical challenges limit your imagination. Each week, the guys on The Blind Handyman answer questions and offer tips on home maintenance and upgrades.
As we've pointed out several times, you do things when you're blind. Many times you do them the same way a sighted person would. A drill is a drill is a drill. A saw is a saw. And you just need to remember, don't get your fingers in it and push the board through it.
You want to make sure that your structure will support this.
We're going to talk about an email that we had gotten about a stove ignition problem.
Assuming that you're blind, John, and you can't read a voltmeter, what do you want to do there?
Most of the new ones in the high-scale reading, it'll make a buzzing noise.
I'm going to talk about installing a micro hood. It's a combination microwave and vent hood.
And we've started drinking early. No, I'm not only kidding.
The Blind Handyman, direct from Lufkin, Texas. Monday nights at 7, Saturdays at noon, and Sunday nights at 11 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 71 with scattered thunderstorms. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 80s. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 90s. Tomorrow night, a few showers with a low in the upper 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, July 25th, 2020. Section A. State Park Offers Outlet for Families, by Tony Venegas. While the COVID-19 pandemic has caused people to readjust their plans to travel, one state park still has its doors open as an outlet for people to get outside. Monahans Sand Hills State Park is located just over 30 miles from Odessa off Interstate 20 and is open to the public to hike on the dunes and even enjoy the night sky. It's a great spot to get out, said Park Superintendent Alan Crow. The sunsets are very popular here. You can enjoy camping underneath the night sky.